Hey guys, it's Carlos Garcia with the Behind the Stick podcast. In this episode, I had the chance to interview a close friend of mine, Jack Bethel. He is our local Fernet rep. Jack has been tremendous help to my career as well as our local Bartenders Guild chapter. In this episode, we get a chance to talk about how to properly ask your rep for a Fernet coin, as well as a soap opera that takes place in IKEA.
They're more difficult products to sell. I've got it pretty easy to have the tough job of selling Fernet to bartenders.
How often do you get asked for a coin?
Usually every day.
Every day?
Like at least once a day. Sometimes at night when I'm out like just having dinner or something, if I'm buying a shot of Fernet or some like figures out that I work for them, they're like, oh, do you have any coins?
Really?
Like, well, you know, I do. We make 100 a year.
Just 100?
100 for the entire state.
Oh, okay.
Each market gets their own coin.
Oh, okay. Year. Yeah.
So we'll like change it up. Austin does a coin, and sometimes they'll take it out of Austin and do like a whole state of Texas coin as well. For Colorado, we keep it for the whole state.
Okay.
Just like isolate certain cities.
What's some of the ways, like worst ways people have asked you for a coin?
Oh my God. So there's this one person that always, she keeps harassing me, but she has this like, every time she sees me, she just stops and holds her hand out. And she's asked me for coins enough that I know that each time she's waiting, expecting her coin.
Holy shit.
I don't know. You don't get something for nothing. We have to, like, get into this together. It's not, like, a sales incentive. But I give coins to people that I think are, like, the responsible stewards of the brand, right? So the people that I want to go into a bar and drop their coin and say, this is who we are. This is our community. Let's drink Fernet together.
That's cool.
Yeah, because it's about a culture of, you know, the service industry.
So what's the story behind the coin, if you know that one?
Yes, the coins go back to originally, it's a World War I tradition of an officer that gave the men in his platoon, whatever you call it, commemorative coins to like, you know, have a community that they built. So each member had these coins, and if I remember this right, one of the guys in the platoon was trapped behind enemy lines. He couldn't prove his identity because he had lost all of his documents. So they thought he was a spy trying to get back in. And he produced his coin. He's like, this is who I am.
This is all I have left.
Yeah. One of the guys recognized the coin. He's like, oh, yeah, you're part of this you know, this regiment.
Okay.
Let him back in. So then it was like, always have your coin on you. If you don't, then you're buying the drinks.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we started in like the 90s in Las Vegas. One of the guys that worked for Fernet was a former military guy.
Okay.
The tradition. Yeah, I mean, I love, I guess, how people from different areas represent their coins. And like, they come, they've got their pride, like, oh, this is my Pittsburgh coin. I met a girl that had a Singapore coin that my guy in San Antonio ended up trading her for. I saw the designs for China that are coming out.
That's cool.
Like, each region has their own thing. And then it's even translated to other brands. I see Maker's Mark coin. Colorado Bartenders Guild made the Plantation Daiquiri Timeout coins. They did them like 3 years ago. Yeah, because you want to make a coin for like your community, your club or something. And you're like, well, we're going to put on it.
So with you working for Fernet, how long have you been doing that for?
I've been with Fernet about 10 months now. So I'm still pretty fresh.
Coming into that year. Is it still as exciting as always?
It's exciting. It's like the first year, you're constantly fighting to feel comfortable, to like say to yourself that you're doing a good job, because there's no one's gonna tell you that you're doing okay. You gotta like constantly be pushing and moving forward. It's not like working behind a bar where you have a set goal of like, okay, I have to make this ticket, to get these ticket times. There's no tangible end. It's like, hit your numbers and
like,
I hope people like you.
How do you like quantify, like, oh, I visited 100 accounts today, but not a single one picked me up. Am I doing a good job? Like, it's hard, I bet. I never thought of it like that. Because the tickets, you're like, okay, my ticket's done. It's right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I saw 5 accounts today and 2 of them went really well. I'm like, okay, yeah, I got 2 good wins today. Maybe I call it quits at 3 o'clock. I don't know. There are other days where it's like, I haven't gotten anything promised today.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a menu item and everybody just wants me to get out of their way, but I have to be at this until 10 o'clock tonight.
So how do you keep yourself motivated and pushing on those days?
I think it's just like when you're not motivated, just go through the motions. Because as you, if you just start and get going, it'll pick up. You know, muscle memory will
kick in.
Kick in, and you're just going to find yourself there and operating. Just forcing yourself to get out and doing these things. You're going to more counts, hitting one more stop, and staying active and healthy. If you get up in the morning and do some push-ups or your calisthenics or lift the triangular weights that they have in your family or something, I don't know. Yeah, just getting after it.
Like 90% of it is just kind of showing up, and then you're like, it's never that bad. You're like, nah, it's never that, once you get there.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's funny that it is so much. It's 90% is just showing up. Uh-huh. If your clients see you there once a week in their restaurants, they know that you care. They know that you care enough to show up, because you're not just going to like sit at home and say, hey, call me up and drink for that.
You know? Yeah, call me when you need anything, but I will be nowhere to be found in the interim.
And that is a lot of the stereotype of what rep life is like.
Really?
Like, oh yeah, what do you do? Sit at home? Yeah, the distributor's out there selling it for you. What do you need? What do you need to do? You can be a brand rep that doesn't focus on sales, or you can be the local sales rep. There's a lot of like brand reps that, you know, maybe their job is PR and events. That's a little bit more common. A lot of companies will have like a part-time rep that is like the local face, right? But they're still a bartender, and they ask them to have a prominent bartending gig to keep them engaged in the community.
I didn't know
and
that.
That's like, that's your person that when, you know, a party comes to town, they're, you know, the point person for that, and they're inviting people and they're getting people in the seats.
Okay.
But you also have the rep that is responsible for sales, that is a full-time employee of the company.
Okay.
That has to work with distributor motivation, making sure the sales reps for the distributor are doing their job, getting out there and selling physically yourself, getting those deals into place, making pricing specials, and then also doing the events and the glad handing. There's just a lot of facets to it that on the day-to-day it totally changes.
That people totally overthink it.
Like, oh yeah, you're just out there glad handing and kissing babies. Yes and no.
How'd you get started in this industry overall? What brought you into like the alcohol, bartending, spirits, sales, all that industry overall?
Into the booze industry, I started bartending when I was 20, but I'd been in the service industry for so long. I could, you know, started my first restaurant job at 15 or something, but I was drinking in a bar and bartender walked out, got fired or something, and they just offered me the job. I was like, Jack, you're sitting in this bar more than anybody else.
That's cool.
Where the bottles are. Get after it.
Okay, where was that at?
That was in Mount Vernon, Iowa.
Yeah. How was that?
It was a seedy dive.
A seedy dive.
Yeah. So there are definitely times where like I got, you know, threatened for, you know, whatever, and you know, I looked at a guy wrong and he pulled a knife on me.
Holy shit.
Like, you know, breaking up bar fights. It was a really interesting place. They'd never heard of a jigger there. Everything was freehanded. They're like, oh yeah, you know, about to that line in the glass ish, but you know, I've got a heavy hand, so I pour harder. But your cost controls. They didn't take credit cards because they didn't want to do taxes. Everything was under the table.
That was pretty fun but terrifying at the same time, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, the times, so their policy was for the last 2 hours of your shift, you could drink anything you want. The rest of the time you had to be sober, which that doesn't really make sense to me.
So you started there, and did you know you wanted to stay in this industry, or how did that come to be?
Not at all. So I went to, I was in college and I was going to school. I thought to be a lawyer. It's like, yeah, I'm going to graduate. I'm going to go to law school. It's going to be, you know, all sunshine and roses.
Everything.
I graduate. I'm like, well, you know, I don't really like the field of law. And I just finished 4 years of school. I don't want to go back into more grad school. Why don't I just get a bartending job? Because I like this.
It's fun. Yeah.
And that's when I got my first cocktail job. And that changed everything.
Kind of opened up your eyes?
Yeah. I mean, the thing with like the difference between cocktailing and bartending is it feels like a career. Mm-hmm. You get this pride in like creating a product. It doesn't necessarily happen in other forms of bartending.
I would agree. There's all these different chains of bartending that everyone has, whether you like beer tending or speed your thing, go to a dive bar or even a club.
Yeah.
And then there's craft where it's like you get a hone in on almost the science behind it. Like, oh, this much that. So that's really what kind of got you stuck in this industry.
Yeah. I mean, all the fields of bartending are really admirable. Like, people that are able to be the fast bartenders in, you know, the high volume clubs, I can't do it.
I've never tried.
I've got so much respect for them. I tried, and it's terrible.
Is it?
You know, I get anxiety with that many people around me. With that high, like, turn and burn, it's like you can't focus on anything. I can't, at least. I can't even get a back order.
and the music's all loud. That's intense.
Yeah.
I want to try it once.
It's all Diplo and Major Lazer. I can't handle this music.
Yeah. I want to try it once. I think that'd be, I think everyone in this industry and want to make this a career should try every facet.
Yeah.
That, like, just try it. You might find out you
do
like one more than
bar,
the other.
Do the club, do the cocktails.
Uh-huh. I think so. So when you were first starting, what's one of the craziest stories that stuck out in your head? I know you said some dude pulled a knife on you, or just something crazy in general.
I mean, the stuff that came out of working in Iowa, I could fill a book with. You know, some woman giving a guy a handjob under the bar while sitting next to her husband. That was
wow.
Weird. And we didn't even know it was happening until we look on the security cameras afterwards. It's like, yeah, she's definitely giving that dude a handjob.
That's it's that question always baffles me because what it is crazy. Because when you work in the bar industry, you see almost all of it. And then you're so, like, you are so numb to it. You are just like, oh, my God. Like, yeah, that's normal. Like, when you work at the dive bar, kicking people out and people screaming at you, after a while, you're just like, yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah. Everyone wants to fight the bartender that kicks him out, too. It's like, I don't get it. You think that I have a choice in this?
Yeah. No, sorry. I got to do it. And let's be honest. How those fights always turn out. Like, if they actually end up in a fight, the dude's usually so shit-faced.
I know.
Like, you just push him over.
It's all really quick, too. Uh-huh. Like, I've never seen a bar fight that lasts longer than 15 seconds.
Yeah, never.
And the cops are usually there as soon as it starts.
Because mm-hmm. So they know.
What are you going to gain from this?
Alcohol does some crazy things to people.
Yeah, but I'm not going to say, I'm not going to disparage our own kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't fight in bars.
Yeah, don't fight in bars. How long were you a bartender before you moved into this brand ambassador? Brand ambassador was it? You? Or yeah. More of a...
Brand ambassador or brand rep or okay. Portfolio manager. There's so many different terms for it.
Okay. So yeah, how long were you bartending before you got into that?
I bartended for 8 years. Well, off and on bartending. Bartending led to restaurant management. I was the GM of the place.
Okay.
Manager over here. Bartending when I can. But I did that for 8 years before I took the job with Fratelli.
Okay, so with people starting off, what is some advice you would give someone to get started in this industry?
I think the most important thing of any goal you have in the industry is to work hard at it and not to think of this industry as something that you can just rest and exist and do. Because just like any other field, you've got to push yourself. You have to go home and read your books. You have to do your research.
If you want to be good at it.
Trying to get better. Uh-huh. Yeah. You need to improve yourself or else it's not going to happen.
So what are some books you would recommend for people getting started? What's one that you like the most or one that you think was the most beneficial?
So the first book I read that kind of got me hooked was Gary Reagan's The Joy of Mixology. And it's almost out of fashion because he talks about all of these drinks that people aren't really impressed with anymore. He goes over things like kamikazes and...
The 90s, cocktail Tom Cruise.
But Gary Reagan is such an influential character that he really covers the whole spectrum. So he starts with his foreword and like the breakdown of why we do this and why we're proud to be bartenders. Then he also sets you up for success by presenting all these drinks in a grid-like format that you can understand. Okay, so a kamikaze is just... a margarita with vodka instead of tequila. Yeah, which is a really great place to start.
Yeah, just because you get to learn having like a background portfolio when someone goes, I only drink this. Then you're like, okay, that's this with that. So let's swap it. Hey, let's try this. Let's try this. And giving that person that guest experience that's why they came to a bar. If they wanted to save money, they wouldn't go out. If they didn't want an experience, they wouldn't go out.
Yeah, if they just wanted a drink, they can sit at home with a bottle of Wild Turkey. Do it themselves, but they want to go out for the experience. But also, you got to learn the basics before you can go into like the really intense, you know, it could be a Boost Cafe or Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you don't know how to make a kamikaze.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you even know what tequila is or mezcal.
Yeah.
Common or cachaça, things that when you're getting started, if you don't know what that is, you can't progress. And so, like you're saying, you just got to keep learning.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, obviously, there's obstacles we all have to overcome. Mm-hmm. What were some of those you had and how'd you overcome them?
Managers that I didn't get along with, because everybody has that, like the manager that you're butting heads with, the person that you think is like in your way from rising. I guess I just had a habit of displacing them. So I got really fortunate that, like, oh, the manager they didn't like, I took her job.
So if you don't like someone, strive to take their job is what we're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what you should cheat, lie, and steal to get them fired and then take their job.
And then do it better.
If you don't like the way a place is being run, mm-hmm. And you think that you can do better, then prove it. You know, if you think that you're really, you're on the ball with your operating organization and the methods that you're going to use in your cocktail program, you know, find someone that's going to take a risk on you and get a bar manager role. You know, bartend your ass off, and when you get that manager role, you're probably going to be working 80-hour weeks for the first year.
When you don't know what you're doing, and you don't know, it's a new realm. Like, I just stepped into that manager role 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
God, it's exhausting.
It's great, though. There's so much pride that you can build in, like, creating this program, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's, I think, the hardest part, because I started from the bottom coming, like, to this role now, is delegation. Trusting people with stuff. It's terrifying. Yeah. But you have to do it. You have to, like, know. You've got to know they're going to get it done. And if they don't, then you got to handle it. Mm-hmm. And that frightens me the most. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you became those manager roles and overcame those obstacles, did they bring new obstacles? Or was it pretty like, okay, I got this now?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, each time that you achieve a goal, mm-hmm. immediately you're presented with something that you've missed, something that you didn't see coming. Or just that next hurdle you have to get over. Mm-hmm. So maybe you get that promotion you've been going for, and then you realize, oh my God, you know, there's a lot of work to be done to prove my worth here, or, you know, to validate myself in all the people's eyes who I said that I could do it better.
Mm-hmm. You have to show it now.
You got to show it. And if you really want to be a success and you want your business to be a success, mm-hmm. which is the ultimate goal, is to be a successful business and to, you know, provide an experience for your guests, which will go hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do all this promotional work. You got to be, you know, trying to get yourself published in different arenas and, you know, putting responses in for requests for proposals from Inbuy Magazine, you know, mm-hmm. and thinking like 8 months out, 10 months out.
Yeah. It's not just, gonna be, yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. What do people want to see in a year, and how can you start planning for that now?
Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest part, because coming from, I just have to finish that one drink in front of me. Mm-hmm. I got to do, like, oh, at the end of the day, my shift's done. Like, you can walk away from that and decompress this one. You're always like, okay, oh my God, I read this cool article at home. Now I can apply it here, or, oh, this and that. And it's, I think it's never ongoing. You're always working when you get to those roles.
It always happens. And there's some people that are, I think, really, really good at that. Like, you know, the guys with Sage Hospitality, mm-hmm. Brandon Wise, and the people that he hires, like Daryl Pryor, like, they have this ability to look at their business and how the business is going to grow, but also just leverage themselves and put themselves into places that are going to pay off in, you know, a year.
Yeah.
And nobody says, like, why are you doing that now? And then you say, you know, when it actually comes to fruition, it's like, oh, so that's what you're thinking.
Yeah. Why didn't I think of that? Like, yeah. Oh yeah, it's just that some of the industry movers you think are crazy, mm-hmm. until 5 years later. You're like, yeah. Oh my God, like, why wasn't anyone doing that?
Yeah, well, they were. No one saw that coming.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty fun. What is one of the stories when you were getting started and you failed, like big failure, and it kind of almost discouraged you, but you learned from it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I still get anxiety from like terrible server shifts that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
When I was trying to like work my way into a bartending position at this new restaurant. And I remember this one brunch service that I showed up at, and I was totally like not there mentally, probably hungover. And there was this woman and her daughter just trying to have like a salad for lunch. And she had a couple dietary restrictions, and I could not get it right. I fired this salad, this gnocchi salad, like 4 or 5 times. Mm-hmm. And each time we brought it out, I'd messed a different part of it up.
That much restriction.
You know, it was like she wanted it without the salad dressing, and she was lactose intolerant. But the first time it came out, there was a kitchen error, and the gnocchi wasn't finished. And then they fired it, and I forgot to tell them to keep the salad dressing off. And then the third time, there was cheese on it. I was like, oh my God, I cannot get it right.
Oh.
It was one of those like quicksand type moments.
Yeah, where the more you kept trying to fix it.
Yeah, the more you fight like trying to get out of that, you've already made the mistake, and mm-hmm. you're just stuck there, and you can't escape this sinking pit of failure.
Was she at least super cool about it, or was it?
No, she
was
terrible.
It was the worst.
I got like mildly berated. The daughter was really cute, and that was the worst part. So probably trying to hit on her. And
she saw that in your eyes. She's like, I'm going to make sure this guy has a horrible day because he's looking at my daughter the wrong way.
Ruin his life.
And you're still thinking about it.
The next 8 years.
Yeah, until it goes away, and then you mess up again.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. So right now you're doing the brand ambassador representing Fernet. Mm-hmm. What are ways you are growing your knowledge and skills to be better at that?
I think the only way that you can really grow the skill set to do this job is to do it more.
Do it more?
Yeah, is just practice. I think that there's a lot of value to developing skills like public speaking and getting on your computer and working on, you know, learning Photoshop and getting really, really proficient with Microsoft products like Excel. The office world
kind of comes back in. Yeah, it kind of comes back in.
Skills. You got to make sure that, you know, you can type well and that you can present yourself well in PowerPoint documents. Mm-hmm. Things that you wouldn't think of like really exist in the beverage world absolutely make a difference in being a rep.
But it is just a job like every other one too. Right? Yeah. You got to know those skills. Mm-hmm. Those are hard. Excel's my... Excel's my... I'm really good at Excel because I went to school for finance, actually. So Excel... Yeah. I nerd out. I have like 7 if-then statements deeps all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to see. I can talk about Excel for hours.
Yeah, make some really rad spreadsheets.
Oh, yeah. And like, it's so funny when everyone's like, oh, you're so nerdy. Like my poor cost sheet. You should see that one. That one's cool. That one's a cool one.
Self-updating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Totally. So when you were getting into this industry, maybe when you were starting off doing the brand ambassador or even bartending, who were some of your mentors you had and how did they encourage you?
Mm-hmm. I was really lucky to have some great mentors in Denver that showed me that you can be a bartender and make a transition into the rep side of the world. And you can have a little bit more stable schedule, mm-hmm. Have more regular revenue and still be happy and engaged in the community, right? Because we as bartenders really interact a lot with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like most of your friend group, it turns out. But so people like Ryan Conklin, who works with Pernod Ricard and Southern Glaciers, was a big mentor. He's one of the all-time great bartenders of Denver. And he made the transition into the rep side after being my friend for a while. And he did a bunch of work at the restaurant that I was at. And when I was looking to make that move, gave me a lot of great advice.
So he kind of, don't recreate the wheel. He kind of just showed you like, oh, this is what I did. This
is
awesome.
This is how I built my resume to present to
These
corporate brands. Or these are the things that you can expect from this kind of job and prepare yourself for.
Did you decide to become a rep or did you get approached or was it a mixture of the both?
It was definitely both. I was talking to a couple companies that it didn't really work out with. And in that period, I went to Camp Runamuck. It's basically a 5-day bartender summer camp where adults get to be kids again.
Go
to a literal summer camp in Kentucky. You sleep in bunk beds. You're in a cabin of 8 people and each cabin is sponsored by a brand. So during the day, you go and do distillery tours all over Kentucky. And in the evenings, you come back and you have different brand parties. People are usually drinking until about 4 or 5 in the morning. And then you're up at 8 to get on the bus to go for your next education tour.
Oh, wow. I bet that's a fun but a hard weekend. The first 2 nights, it's like, oh, I can do this. Yeah. But by like the 3rd, 4th, you're like, oh, my God.
No, the first 2 nights were just warm up. I didn't really get into it until the 3rd or 4th night. The first night I was out by like 2, 2:30, and everyone was making fun of me for going to bed early.
You were the nerdy kid at camp no one wanted to hang out with.
Going to bed at 2:30. No, I actually was fortunate enough to be in the Fernet Branca cabin there.
Okay.
And that's how I met everyone.
Okay.
When they brought the position to Colorado, they knew that I wanted to make that transition, and they approached me.
That's pretty cool, actually. So you'd say to get further in this industry is surround yourself, go to these kind of events, get involved with the community, like do something where you're just not going shift, going home, going shift, going home, because then you don't get that opportunity.
Absolutely. Engage yourself in every opportunity that you have. Every brand education seminar that you can get to, every competition that you can enter, do it, push yourself, and just learn. Yeah, keep moving forward. I never thought that I would get into Camp Runamuck when I applied. They get like, I don't know, 10,000 applications for 200 spots each year, but somehow I got in. it was one of the best 5 days of my life.
And it really changed your life, it sounds like, because you got to meet the people you needed to, and it pushed you. Who knew a summer camp party would push you down a career path?
Yeah, I mean, the networking that we do in this industry is often surrounded by alcohol, and you think that you're just having fun and partying, but what you're really doing is presenting yourself to the people that are paying attention, because there's always someone there paying attention.
And how would you say, getting started in this industry, you don't know where to turn? Like, I want to go network. I want to do this. What are some steps someone could take? Like, what do they look for?
That depends on where you are. I think a lot of areas are really fortunate to have a chapter of the Bartenders Guild, of the United States Bartenders Guild. And even if you're not in an area that has an active chapter, you can still be a member at large, which is what I did for a while when I was living up in the mountains in the Western Slope. There was an active chapter up there. I was a member at large. I would do online courses with them, and that kind of kept me, I guess, excited about bartending, even though I wasn't surrounded by anybody that really cared about it. But I wanted to keep pushing because I heard rumors of people doing things in New York or LA or Singapore, and I wanted to be part of that, you know? So just like even the idea of someone else out there that is into it
pushed you.
Yeah. So I'd say reach out to your guild, read books, you know, join Reddit cocktails.
So back to the coin thing, you must have a plethora, like your own little collection then, from different reps, or you're just like, yeah, they come and go, so you hand them out a lot?
I call it my pension package, though. Like the coins, my little personal collection. Because they're selling for a fair amount of money on like eBay.
Really?
I think is crazy. It's cool. I don't support it because I want these coins to be, you know, given without anything asked for, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea of someone that went to our Tales of the Cocktail Party and they're selling their coin now, to me, that feels a little bit dirty, but they're, you know, they're selling for like $300. So Jesus. If I ever get
you have enough coins,
I've got enough coins to last me for a couple months of food.
In an industry that is plagued with high turnover and burnout, how did you manage to find stability in it?
Some kind of miracle. I don't know. I think that our work habits may be a reflection of the point we're at in our lives. And for me, when I really kind of needed to be working hard to succeed in the industry, it coincided with a point in my life where I wanted to put my head down and I didn't necessarily want to be engaged in having like that much of a personal life. I was ready to just, you know, really sink my teeth into work. And just for whatever reason, I was new to Denver. I didn't have that great of a friend group established. And really how I felt at home was by working, which is kind of messed up. And I don't support that. I don't support these unhealthy lifestyle habits of, you know, pouring yourself completely in your work, because you need to have a balance if you want to survive.
It's cool that certain jobs can make you feel like home.
Yeah, it can make you feel like home, and it can give you a purpose, you know? And that's one thing that I don't like about American work culture, is that we define ourselves based on what we do for work. And taking this job with Fernet Branca has given me the opportunity to reflect on my life a little bit more and look at how unhealthy those work habits were. But sometimes it's necessary. If you're going to be a bar manager, if you're going to be a restaurant GM, you have to put in those hours and you have to be ready for that.
Especially if you walk into a program that wasn't set up yet and you walk in, you have to start from scratch. Granted, now you're spending 8-9 hours, but it's going to build you to where you can take time off, where it runs itself.
I mean, the greater idea of mise en place. When you set yourself up for mise en place for a different shift or just cooking for yourself at home, you make your cooking task or your shift easier. But if you organize your program with mise en place, then you're going to make the entire life easier.
As you keep growing, you're learning to get that balance a little bit more.
Yeah. To lead a happy and fulfilling life, it's taken me stepping back from work and actively trying to work less. Fernet, I'm sorry. No. It just means that set yourself goals, and when you achieve those goals, be okay stopping.
Achieving, taking a break. Yeah. You deserved it.
Yeah. Also realize that when we compare ourselves to our competitors, we only see the best of them, right? We see what they put on social media, what's on Facebook and their Instagram post of that, you know, hot cocktail that they're doing. You don't necessarily see them stepping away and taking the break, because I guarantee that they are. I follow the Danish Fernet Branca account, and they put up a whole bunch of stuff in Danish that I, of course, can't read, but somehow I get the gist of it, that it's different marketing than our U.S., and they have that life is bitter tag on a bunch of stuff. But it all makes sense. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, some bitter Dane drinking Fernet Branca, preferably fresh off the tap.
Off the tap, yeah. There's a lot of talk about getting a tap here in the spring, so if you guys are out of here, there will probably be some by the time this airs. So
yeah, that would be cool. We got three places right now that are jockeying to be the first ones to put it on tap.
That's awesome. That's really cool. As you're working for Fernet, what are ways you're pushing the envelope?
I try to smile more. I think that what I'm trying to do most is to be as respectful of the community as I can. Coming from, you know, being a bar manager and being a bartender especially, I would hate it if someone was in this position that tried to manipulate the loyalty of bartenders to further their own means. Which, you know, we kind of have to look at in the balance of business. And, you know, the brand needs to grow. That's kind of how business works.
Yeah.
That's why they hired me, is to grow the brand and to increase distribution and to get more cocktail placements. But what I don't want is to manipulate people, say, hey, I'm a bartender just like you, except no, I'm not anymore. Yeah. You know, I have to understand that difference and be respectful.
Okay, so go in that approach of honesty. Honesty is the best policy.
Honesty is absolutely the best policy. If you go into a place, introduce yourself to the bar manager, make friends with the bartenders, and, you know, develop that relationship. That they want to do business with you because they like you being around and they like your product.
I think that's forgotten. People are always so push, but 90% of the time, just talk to someone. People want to be heard.
Figure out what they want. Create that symbiotic relationship. Everybody gets something out of it.
While you were bartending, what was your number one rule behind the bar and why?
Wipe your knife.
Yeah.
That's a big one. I would say treat others with respect. Your staff, your fellow staff. And your patrons. The one thing that I have ever fired someone on the spot for is sexism. Big situation I'm not going to get into, but as soon as I see a staff member or a guest, you know, being inappropriate, being aggressive or sexist against any member of my staff or the community, that's where I draw the line. Absolutely not.
It's almost forgotten about. Like, people just turn a blind eye so often, and I don't know why.
Of like, just treating women like absolute garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that whole negative side is, it seems like it's getting smaller and smaller and getting brought up, which is really cool.
I mean, 2018, Donald Trump's America. We got to talk about this or it's just going to get pushed under the rug.
Yeah. What are some of your recent obstacles and failures that you've overcome, and how did you do it?
Every day is failure, especially in this industry. When you're in sales, like, you are confronted with failure every single day. Yeah, you just get told no a lot, but that's great. That means you get used to someone saying no. It means it's more comfortable to say yes. I had this friend that was showing me this program that she was in where she just asked people for things. Like, if she sees something that she wants to do or a place that she wants to go, she'll just, you know, even knowing that the answer is going to be no, she'll still ask. Uh-huh. Because that act of pushing yourself to ask and being rejected has its own kind of like cathartic or kind of learning ability to it. You know, she called it rejection therapy.
The best way I always think about it, being that 14-year-old boy going and talking to the cute girl and getting rejected. That's what it feels like.
It's like, ew, gross.
Yeah.
Who are you?
It's like, it's hard, but you're saying you're becoming more and more used to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, the confidence that I can carry into my day-to-day outside of work is one thing, but, you know, it makes you better at your job too. If you're used to being rejected, and I guess get better at that, and can approach a rejection with not necessarily a counter argument, but understanding the reasons why and focusing on how to prevent that. Okay, I got rejected from this place with this product proposal because I didn't do my research on them, and this program isn't going to work there. So that's my fault. I should have, you know, done my homework. Or, you know, you go into a place and you do get a placement in a menu item or a shot in a beer program or one of these, you know, big successes, it's because you've done the research, you know who you're talking to, and you know what's going to work in their establishment.
So you're failing every day, which is a good thing, though. It sounds so negative.
I'm a complete abject failure. Just ask my parents.
So what are some specific skills or piece of knowledge you're looking to gain?
I guess the skills and the knowledge that I want to learn are tied into growth in the industry. So I would like to, you know, be better educated financially in the workings of a 3-tier distribution system. So how do I, you know, incentivize the distributor to be more efficient? How can I
understand the reasoning that my brand managers are using when they set the budgets that we have for the areas, right? Mm-hmm. So getting into the knowledge that they have and the things that I can learn to, you know, not that I want to take their jobs.
No, but take their jobs. Take their jobs. Yeah. Again, lie, cheat.
Lie, cheat, steal, and yeah, we'll get you job. Fired so I can take your job.
And do it better. Yeah, that's the secret, though. You can't take their job and not do it better. If you're going to go all that effort, you have to do it better. Yeah. Is the rule.
It's restaurant Game of Thrones is what I call it.
So where do you see yourself in about 2 years?
I don't know. I don't have 2020 vision. No, it's what the future holds, I don't know, honestly. Uh-huh. And I try not to kind of set the 10-year goal. But mm-hmm. more to have shorter goals that I feel are more tangible. So take where I am now, push it as well as I can, be as good at this job as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the same time, foster growth and try to grow, I guess, personally. You know, I've got some business endeavors that I'd love to see come to fruition. Okay.
How do you think the bartending scene will change in the near future?
Where bartending, I think, is going. Mm-hmm. We've seen a huge push of focusing on hospitality in the past 3 years, which I think is fantastic. We have seen hospitality grow so much. We've had so many great examples of phenomenal hospitality. What I think that we're going to see in the next 5 years is a little bit of that hospitality pride taking a back seat to just performing excellent service, the out and ego. We know that this is an egotistical game, but it's all about, like, this is who I am. This is how I'm doing it. And look at how nice I am. Look at me. Yeah. But I think that we're going to see a pushback against that of more modesty, more service, and making it more about the guest rather than about the bartender. There's too many skilled people in the industry for that to persist. And the knowledge is there. There's so many great books that have been published. Mm-hmm. And your access to information is so much easier.
What do you think the next big trend will be?
I think that we're simplifying things. Mm-hmm. We saw the pushback against the 8-ingredient drink to more simplified, streamlined things that are happening a little bit quicker. I'm not sure if the cocktail trend is going to stick around for that long of people wanting the highfalutin drinks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tied into the strength of the market. So if we see an economic, you know, decline, we're going to see, I guess, the complexity of drinks also diminish. We'll probably go more towards straight spirits again. I'm not really sure what the beer market is doing. Nielsen reports on U.S. consumption of beer puts it all down across the board. America is just drinking less beer. It's going towards wine and spirits. I think that the wine world is going to grow. Like, the natural wine movement is really cool, and I'm stoked to see that happen. I love having small producers making juice that tastes really funny and is delicious. And having them get good credit for it is really nice. And then I think that Amaro and, or Amari, if you want to, Latin or Greek descent, I don't know. I think that Amari are growing. I think that, you know, Fernet Branca is one of the strongest brands in the category, and I'm, you know, just excited to be working with them. It is cyclical. And I really want to see, like, the 1950s tiki dad basement bars of, like, you know, hanging out and sipping, like, Mai Tais or something, but in a really, like, kitschy, tacky way.
Super Hawaiian shirt, super gaudy, like
mid-mod all the way. And I'd love, I have this vision of, like, doing a, all right, so when in, like, the, what, probably mid-90s or something, when kind of punk rock became a little bit more mainstream, there was in probably, like, around Ventura, California area, all of these, you know, disenfranchised punks that felt like their genre of music had betrayed them and had gone mainstream. Uh-huh. And they're like, you know, these, you know, counterculture alternative guys. Like, what do we do now? You know, now punk's
not cool anymore.
Yeah. So they picked up tiki in the mid 90s. And there was this really cool, like, 10 years of tiki punk rock happening in Southern California.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Tiki so punk really, rock.
I want that to be a thing.
A tiki punk rock bar.
I want to do a tiki punk bar. Getting all rockabilly with the cramps and shit. I call it Murder Tiki.
Murder Tiki?
Yeah.
Tell us about something you are looking forward to in your career down the road.
I hope that at some point I can look forward to being perfectly comfortable and not doubting my job security.
The guy below you is going to lie, cheat, steal, take your job.
Yeah. I mean, I go around Denver and I see all the people that are like, how the heck did this guy get that for that job? I want that job. I know that people are gunning for it. And I also know that the way that these things work is – you know, you have to be productive to a certain level to justify your position. And you don't just do it just to, you know, justify yourself, just to have the validation from your superiors, but you also have to look at, you know, their numbers when it comes to, you know, they're looking at their employment costs. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, have sales risen enough in this area to justify the paycheck that is going to the man who's working in that area? It's a sheer cost-benefit analysis. And I'm constantly concerned that there isn't enough growth, or I'm not doing enough.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. It's it's not healthy, but, you know, I think that I see a lot of people, especially that are new in the rep side, that uh-huh. are concerned with that. And as you become more experienced and more efficient, you start to realize that there is a lot of job security and you're doing just fine.
But
don't stress as much.
Yeah, but it's terrifying. You said 9 months, not 10 months, right?
Yeah.
Terrifying. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I know we got to go run and check some stuff out, so we'll end it here. Thank you for listening. A little update on Jack. Jack has been the rep for a little over a year now, and he's been flourishing. He's doing awesome, amazing things. If you guys will have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to reach out to me and I will direct them to him. You can reach us at behindthestickpodcast.com as well as on our social media at behindthestickpodcast for Instagram. Facebook is the same, or even my personal Instagram at Carlos the Creative.